Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Barry Eichengreen's Hall of Mirrors is a work of comparative economic history that places the Great Depression of the 1930s alongside the global financial crisis and Great Recession that began in 2008. Rather than treating the episodes as isolated disasters, Eichengreen interweaves their origins, financial panics, policy decisions, and incomplete recoveries. His central concern is not simply whether the later crisis resembled the earlier one, but how memories of the Depression influenced officials, economists, and political leaders when modern finance began to fail. The book argues that those memories helped authorities act more quickly with liquidity support, bank rescues, monetary expansion, and fiscal stimulus, reducing the risk of a collapse on the scale of the 1930s. Yet the same historical framing could also mislead, encouraging policymakers to overlook features unique to modern, globally integrated, and lightly regulated financial markets. Combining United States developments with a substantial international perspective, the book evaluates both the value and the limits of using history as a guide to economic policy. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, historical analogy as a tool for crisis management and a source of error. The defining feature of Hall of Mirrors is its examination of historical analogy itself. Eichengreen shows that the Great Depression was the dominant reference point for many decision makers in 2008 and 2009. It supplied a vivid warning about the danger of bank failures, deflation, collapsing demand, and official hesitation. This memory mattered because policymakers did not confront a crisis with complete information or unlimited time. They needed an interpretive framework, and the Depression offered one. It encouraged central banks and governments to provide emergency liquidity, stabilize key institutions, and support spending rather than repeating the passivity and contraction associated with the early 1930s. The book therefore treats ideas and institutional memory as forces with real economic consequences, not as background decoration. At the same time, Eichengreen stresses that analogies simplify. Modern distress was concentrated in securitized credit, shadow banking, cross-border funding, and complex financial interconnections that did not map neatly onto the banking structure of the Depression era. A historical comparison is most useful when it identifies mechanisms, such as self-reinforcing panic and inadequate aggregate demand, rather than when it assumes that the old event provides a complete script. This makes the book a study of policy judgment under uncertainty as much as a narrative of two downturns. Secondly, why decisive intervention helped prevent a second Great Depression? Eichengreen's broad explanation for the less catastrophic outcome after 2008 is that authorities responded more aggressively than their predecessors had in the early Depression. In the 1930s, monetary constraints, bank failures, and weak or delayed policy support allowed financial disruption to intensify into a prolonged economic collapse. In contrast, the response to the modern crisis included lender of last resort operations, extraordinary central bank measures, government efforts to recapitalize or support financial institutions, and fiscal stimulus. The argument is not that every intervention was flawless, or that its precise effects can be measured with certainty. It is that officials understood the potentially catastrophic feedback loop between financial panic and economic contraction well enough to act before it became still more destructive. Eichengreen links this change partly to the intellectual legacy of Keynes and of Milton Friedman and Anna Schwartz, whose interpretations of the Depression emphasized deficient demand and damaging monetary failure. The comparison also clarifies why banking policy cannot be separated from macroeconomic policy. A failing financial system restricts credit and amplifies fear, while falling incomes and employment worsen losses throughout the system. Stabilization, therefore, required addressing both confidence in financial intermediaries and the broader collapse of spending. The book presents this as a major lesson learned, while remaining attentive to the weak and uneven recovery that followed. Thirdly, financial innovation, deregulation, and the vulnerability of modern credit markets. A central comparison in the book concerns the conditions that made each economy fragile before the crash. Eichengreen identifies periods of financial innovation, rising leverage, optimistic expectations, and inadequate oversight as important elements in both the 1920s and the decades before 2008. The forms differed. Earlier markets involved their own speculative practices and new securities, while the later boom centered on mortgage credit, securitization, highly leveraged institutions, and a large shadow banking system. But the underlying problem was similar private risk-taking expanded faster than the capacity of regulation and supervision to contain system-wide consequences. The international dimension deepened this vulnerability. Capital moved across borders, but the institutions responsible for oversight and rescue remained primarily national. When confidence broke, losses and funding pressures traveled through interconnected markets faster than coordinated political responses could develop. Aichi Green does not reduce the crisis to a single culprit, such as monetary policy, irresponsible borrowers, or financial misconduct. His comparative method instead emphasizes how incentives, institutional gaps, and collective optimism can reinforce one another. This perspective also explains why an apparently resilient system can become unstable suddenly. Financial arrangements that appear efficient in calm periods may depend on continuous refinancing, rising asset values, and confidence that counterparties will be paid. Once those assumptions fail, innovation can transmit rather than disperse risk. The book uses this history to argue for regulation that accounts for systemic linkages, not only the condition of individual firms. Fourthly, the contrast between New Deal restructuring and limited post-2008 reform, Hall of Mirrors draws an important distinction between emergency stabilization and durable reform. The Great Depression produced a far-reaching restructuring of the United States financial framework, including measures that constrained risky banking practices and strengthened public protections. Aichi Green connects these reforms to the long period in which the financial system was comparatively stable. The severity of the Depression created political conditions in which stronger rules were possible, even when those rules limited the discretion and profits of financial institutions. The response after 2008 was different. Governments acted forcefully enough to avert a deeper collapse, but the political coalition for comprehensive structural reform was weaker. Because catastrophe was avoided, the urgency that might have supported more sweeping changes faded. Financial interests and opponents of tighter regulation had greater room to resist lasting restrictions. This is one of the book's more pessimistic conclusions. Success in containing a panic can undermine the appetite for reforms designed to prevent the next one. The issue is not whether every post-crisis rule was ineffective. Rather, Aichi Green questions whether moderate reforms adequately addressed the incentives and institutional vulnerabilities that had accumulated before 2008. The comparison shifts attention from the dramatic days of emergency rescue to the less visible politics of prevention. It suggests that crisis policy should be judged not only by whether markets reopen, but also by whether the recovery leaves the system less prone to renewed instability. Lastly, incomplete recovery, international coordination, and the costs of premature complacency. Aichi Green distinguishes sharply between avoiding economic freefall and achieving a robust recovery. The interventions of 2008 and 2009 may have prevented a depression comparable to the 1930s, but they did not automatically restore output, employment, investment, or confidence at a satisfactory pace. That distinction is essential to the book's assessment of policy. A rescue of the financial system can stop panic, yet households, businesses, and governments may remain burdened by debt, weak demand, and political conflict. The international setting makes this harder to resolve. Both major crises unfolded across national borders, but exchange rate arrangements, sovereign constraints, and domestic political priorities often obstructed coordinated action. Aichi Green's earlier scholarship on international monetary history informs his attention to these tensions. The Depression demonstrated how international monetary arrangements could transmit deflation and constrain national responses. The modern crisis showed a different but related mismatch between globally connected finance and nationally organized regulation and fiscal authority. The book consequently warns against complacency. After an initial stabilization, policymakers can learn the lesson that panic must be met rapidly, while failing to learn the equally important lesson that recovery requires sustained support and credible institutional repair. This focus gives the book relevance beyond its two central episodes. It frames financial crises as long processes in which the aftermath, including reform fatigue and uneven growth, can be as consequential as the original shock. In conclusion, Hall of Mirrors is particularly valuable for readers who want more than a chronological account of the Great Depression or the 2008 crisis. It will suit students of economics and history, policy professionals, financially literate general readers, and anyone seeking to understand why references to the 1930s were so influential during the global financial emergency. Its practical benefit lies in showing how financial panic, collapsing demand, institutional weakness, and political hesitation can interact. Its intellectual benefit is more demanding. It teaches readers to use comparisons carefully, asking which mechanisms genuinely recur and which differences alter the appropriate response. Aichi Green stands out among crisis writers because he does not merely argue for or against particular rescue measures. He connects policy choices to the history through which officials interpreted events, then assesses the political obstacles to reforms after the immediate danger passed. The alternating treatment of the two crises gives the analysis a distinctive comparative structure and prevents either period from becoming a simple morality tale. The book is also broader than accounts centered solely on the United States, since it emphasizes international capital flows, coordination problems, and the global transmission of distress. readers should approach its policy conclusions as a historically grounded interpretation rather than as the final word on contested counterfactuals. Even so, its central warning remains durable: preventing collapse is indispensable. But it is not equivalent to building a financial and economic system capable of sustaining recovery and resisting the next crisis. If you would like to support Barry Eichengreen, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.